Thank you.
All right, the door shuts, lights are on, cameras are rolling. Today, we got the trifecta happening. My name is Christian, host of the Most High Show. You guys go around and kind of give yourself a little introduction.
Well, I'm one of the three amigos here today. My name is Mitchell. And today I feel like I'm a recovering asshole.
Nice.
Trying not to be one, working on it diligently.
Yeah.
Seeking spiritual counsel, praying, meditating, trying to do the work. Which is what I consider part of my program.
Yeah. All right.
Good stuff. I'm David. About 3 years into the process of, I kind of look at it as a process of refinement.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's like varying degrees of sandpaper. I started off just like peeling away bark, and I'm finally onto some sandpaper at this point. It might be 30 grit. It's not super refined.
What is 30 grit? That's rough?
Yeah, it's super rough. That's like pebbles on glue on paper.
Okay.
But hopefully one day, if I stay dedicated to the process, we'll get to a point of wet sanding.
Yeah.
Get things really smooth.
Well, I think that's kind of the topic today, right? The process, the means in which we refine. I like what you said, you said you were a recovering asshole today.
I didn't have better language for it, but yeah.
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 Well, I think there's a lot of truth to that. Like, being in recovery, you're kind of forced to address your character defects. And
right.
Most of us, unless forced to, don't address them. And usually we don't address them until something's like on fire or someone's shouting. And so when we do, then... But I always notice, and I think I've said this before, is like I always recognize that way too late. Like I don't recognize it quick enough, So I think I'm working on trying to recognize it quicker, when I'm wrong, when I'm off base, when I'm acting out selfishly. It's like, how do I recognize that quicker?
It's interesting because for people who aren't really familiar with this process, it might not really make sense. Why are we focusing on what you might call a character defect or maybe inappropriate behavior patterns? And from my experience with this, it's that if we want to feel good about our lives and our interactions in a way where we don't feel like we have to engage in self-destructive behavior, then we've got to do better and act better and treat people better. So when we first come into this program, people will say things like, you only got to change one thing. Like, what's that? Everything. So if you come in here a raging asshole who's self-destructing,
right,
you might want to change pretty much all of that.
Yeah.
So that's something that, David and I have been working on together for some years now. And it's been a lot of fun, and it's been very painful.
Yeah.
All at the same time.
Yeah.
It's a good pain, though,
Yeah.
It's yeah.
Like the pain you feel after a good workout.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like acid burn.
It's interesting. I find, first off, anytime anyone says anything that's one of those little like rhymy hints,
right? Right.
That like meeting makers make it, stuff like that.
Right.
Feelings aren't forever.
Feel your feelings.
Yeah.
Feelings aren't fact.
It drives me.
Don't poke the bear.
Absolutely bananas. Because I'm the software that I've written over the years that is now my operating system. It's automatic. It's subconscious. It's not something I actively say, oh, I'm going to think like that. It's just my automatic response to stimuli is cynical.
Yeah. Right?
It's me wanting to feel superior to feel different, to feel unique, mm-hmm. but also to feel guarded, protected, to limit how vulnerable I am. So when I hear stuff like that, I automatically think that's fucking cheesy. You know, that I just write it off. That's
right.
That's
right.
A bunch of bullshit.
Right.
And despite my best efforts to throw away those, what I've come to realize are little jewels, little Easter eggs. Instead, I try to take my character defect of my out of control ego or self righteousness. And say, well, okay, what's the deeper truth in that?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Let's peel it back. Yeah. Because that initial interaction of hearing something like that
right.
doesn't work for me. But I know that those little rhymy sayings, those little cliches, they're there for a reason. And it's because they've stood the test of time.
Right.
They are applicable. They work.
Yeah.
So then, if that's true, which it clearly is, mm-hmm. then what I need to do, the work that I've realized, is that I need to find how it's applicable to me. How does that make sense to me? What is the value in this that relates to my needs?
Instead of the gut reaction to dismiss it because it's too simple.
That gut reaction
I
can use as a red flag, as an alarm, as a call to action of like, hey, there's work to be done here. You know, the freedom, we're trying to gain freedom from our broken software.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Bad habits, twisted perspectives,
right.
broken ideals.
Yeah.
In order to do so, we have to use those bad habits, those perspectives to our benefit.
Yeah.
And the most immediate way that that works for me is when I get that automatic response of, oh, fuck this. You know, oh, dude, shove it. I don't want to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm over it.
Right.
For me, that's a moment, and I've only gained this moment through this process. And every time I engage in something like this, I get another little nanosecond.
Right.
And it's a moment in between the stimuli and reaction where I can be the observer.
Yes.
I can notice, oh, my mind's thinking like that.
Right.
And then I can go, all right, hang on, pause.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
Where's the opportunity for growth here? And how can this work for me?
Yeah.
How can I build with this?
A bunch of things are popping in my mind. So I'll see if my brain will keep up with this. But like my grandmother used to do this thing when you lost something, like you lost your keys or your glasses or your wallet, and it was in the house somewhere, but you couldn't find it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you're searching frantically, and you're like, you know, it's really annoying because you want to go somewhere and you can't go anywhere because you don't have keys or whatever. And so my grandma would say, take the dish rack, the dish, like, you know, we had, she had those cloth napkins.
Yeah.
So she'd say, take one of these napkins, and she'd tie it in a knot, as tight as you can, and you put it on the table that you eat dinner on. And she says, you're putting the devil's balls in a knot, and then you're putting it on the table, and you're saying, I'm not letting your balls out of this knot until you give me back my keys. Totally superstitious, totally no merit to that, except for what it does is it defers your attention to that rag, that knot on the kitchen table. So your mind goes, okay, I've done something. I can't find it. I can't control that. I can't find it. I can keep searching, and become more agitated. But when you tie that knot and you put it on there, it allows you to go, okay, give you a second. And once that pressure's off, what usually always happens is you remember where you put it or someone finds it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're not, the devil's not literally got his balls tied up on your kitchen table.
Right.
But the idea of that, and I think a lot in the faith that I practice in Christianity, that there's a lot of those stupid sayings. And I do the same thing. When someone says something, you know, I really have that reaction. And it's so good to hear someone put it into words because, but I've often known, like, okay, there's a convention that sounds too simple, but there's a conventional wisdom there that exists. And if I can get past, sometimes past the person saying it.
Yeah.
And if I can get past that, and I can, like you said, get to that deeper wisdom, then I can accept, you know, the truth that's yeah. being conveyed. Yeah.
Because that truth is there.
It's there.
It's just, it's up to you to reveal it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And the truth of how it works for me, you know, it might be different than the truth of, in practice, how it works for you.
Right.
But it's the idea.
Yes.
You know, it's conveying right. the message.
Right.
And that's, if you can get to the core of the message that you're after.
Yeah.
That's something that you can add to your skill set.
Yeah.
You know.
I've got one question. How free do you want to be?
That's another annoying one.
Fucking drives me so crazy. Like, I want to slap you when you say shit.
For
like
a
that.
Second, I thought I was going to entertain it, and then I thought, wait a minute, that's one
instantly
of those things.
Instantly, I was like, I'm going to grab his hair and pull him back out of the chair. He says that shit to me. Why? Well, I only accept.
I was locked and loaded.
Dude.
Yeah.
It drives me nuts. And it's yeah. like, and it's judgment. And it's,
it is.
You know, and
yeah.
and often, you know.
It's our own stuff that's
yeah.
reacting to that.
Yeah. And it's seeing.
How dare you simplify my plight to this little three sentence?
I'm more
quip.
Complex.
Yeah.
Or I, you see.
I'm special, more unique than this stupid little pun you just said.
Terminally unique?
Terminally.
Yeah, he's full of them, dude.
So if you could set yourself aside and say, what is he actually trying to convey to
exactly.
me?
Exactly.
Yeah. I really want to know, like, how free do you want to be? Do you want to engage in justified anger?
Yeah.
Or do you want to see. Are if you, maybe, just maybe, you have a little part in this that you could use to grow on,
yeah.
or do you just want to point fingers?
Right.
Because we all know you have three fingers pointing back at you, and you're pointing a finger.
It's just killing us.
It's relentless.
I can keep going.
It's killing us with it right
now.
Yeah. But that is, how free do you want to be is basically, hey, man, are you willing to like acknowledge your faults or do the work that it's going to require to get to you to where you want to get? That's really the question, right?
And I actually posed that for a real reason. So the topic today we wanted to loosely base this podcast on
yeah.
is sovereignty of one's own program.
Yeah.
So from what I gather from interacting with David, he's definitely got a unique approach to how he maintains his spiritual path and his growth.
Yeah.
And it's been interesting to learn from what he does and share what I do. And so I think
unique, like he kills chickens or.
Well, I
not
guess
that unique.
I guess David could probably best explain his approach. I yeah. only have observations.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Yeah. I think,
oh, if someone knows what sovereignty means, they can paste the definition.
Oh yeah. If we could get someone to paste the definition of sovereignty,
that'd be great.
That'd be awesome.
Cause our phones are busy.
I think, you know, for the crisis in my life, you know, I had to finally give in to work in a 12-step program, and I tried everything else unsuccessfully, and my tyrannical will was just out of control, but it couldn't solve the issues I was having. And finally I said, all right, well, there's two options. There's death, or I can go and try this
yeah.
program.
Right. Know?
And in doing so, the one thing that held me back, like I hear a lot of people in this particular group that I go to, or organization, is, you know, that it's, there's the word God is used often.
Yeah.
And I just didn't have any contextual understanding of what God was. You
yeah.
know, I hadn't really looked into it enough. I based my interaction and understanding with this idea of God on periphery information, on other people's experiences.
Yeah.
And I didn't have any of my own. I didn't do any of the homework prior to passing any sort of judgment.
Right.
Or finding any sort of usefulness for having an idea of what that meant to me.
Right. So what was your response at that time, like coming stepping into that? What was your response to hearing that word?
It was
that name.
I lumped God and religion together.
Okay.
So opiate of the masses.
Yeah.
You know, it was something for weak people.
Everyone's got a crutch.
Here's uneducated.
Crutch. Yeah.
Archaic.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like a lot of bad was done in the name of God and yeah. religion. Also, this idea of dogma. And with that, I associated a lack of autonomy, right? You got to do this by these rules or be right. judged in this way.
Right.
My family is traditionally Catholic. So there you go with that. Not passing judgment, I'm just saying.
Right. You know. That's kind of how you had that
yeah.
mindset.
That's how I arose at those understandings, I yeah. guess. Even though they're misunderstandings.
So you're first hearing that word brought up, and your initial reaction is like, oh, that's, you know. So how did you get over that? What helped you to get past that thinking?
I recognized that, you know, the alternative was death.
Quite
literally, yeah. you know. Yeah. I woke up one morning. I was like, man, I'm done with life. I'm done. I'm over it.
Yeah.
I gave it a good shot. Had some laughs. Had some great experiences. I'm at a point. I've crossed some sort of threshold where, you know, there's no riding the plane at this point. So I might as well just steer it into the mountain. You know, like I was leaning hard into it.
Yeah.
And that's. The closer I got to the mountain, the more I kind of like started questioning, like, well, is that really, there's no parachute around? There's nothing else? Like, right. I started right. freaking out.
It started becoming very real.
It got real, real.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And at the last moment, you know, I reached for the exit door, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, all right, regardless of my fear of heights, I got to go out the door, you know?
Yeah.
And that, you know, that fear of heights, I can equate to the idea of having to engage this concept of God. And then once, to the credit of the literature available and the guidance of those who had kind of come before me, once I realized it was a God of my own conception, I mean, that was an epiphany.
Yeah.
It was a game changer. Because that then is applicable to everything. This idea
yeah.
of, man, like, this Catholic God doesn't work for you? Okay. This, you know, this whatever being over here doesn't work for you.
Right.
These... prophets don't work for you.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine, but they're not intrinsically all irrelevant or purposeless. Like there are aspects of these that can be helpful, that can be of yeah. service to me, and
right.
I recognize that. Okay, well, if it's a God, a higher being, or whatever of my own understanding, well. It could also be that it's a metaphor, right?
Right.
Like you can abstract the idea.
Right.
Right? It right. could just be something of greater power, you know, the universe, man, which I go to a lot. It's like, you know, when I get a little too woo-woo with the universe, I back out of it a little bit and I go, okay, well, what's this a metaphor for, you know?
Right.
Because there's... my own comfort levels with things change as I grow as well. I'm going yeah. to outgrow my understandings, hopefully. And that will bring me to a point in which I now need further
right.
Analysis, exploration, discovery.
Right. Right. Correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm not a genius. What you're basically saying is you had to identify with something greater than yourself.
Yeah.
Some idea, some concept. And if you just simply had to look around you and say, the universe is bigger than me, I'm subject to whatever's going on here. That's something that, you know, I can attribute what's happening around me to. And some people even use, I've heard people use an acronym, group of drunks.
Yep.
Like, hey, these group of drunks, they got sober, and obviously they figured out something I haven't, and they're a bigger force than me, so maybe I'll do what they're doing, and for now that can be my understanding of the way toward progress and light, so to speak.
Yeah,
it's a way to gather information to add to the context from which you form your perspective, and your perspective is your understanding of your place in everything around you.
Right.
When where I was at was so inwardly focused in a fearful, cut off sort of way. That I failed to have any perspective anymore. Things were just completely distorted.
Right.
And once I was able to find these resources, these avenues of thought to gain perspective, to build perspective, then things started to slowly turn around.
Right. You begin to develop, and you mentioned this early on, it's like an observing ego. This ability to see yourself and go, hey, that's, we shouldn't be thinking that. That's not the right thinking. But before, the idea of a higher power without that, then you were only left to your own thinking.
It's me now.
Yeah. It's whatever I'm thinking and experiencing and feeling now. That is reality. That's truth. That's everything. That encompasses everything. That is the universe. My understanding of this specific moment.
Yeah, my universe is here.
Right. You know? Yeah. And I think that one of the things that religion does a lot of great things for people, but one of the things that it doesn't mean to do, but it does do, is it objectifies God. Mm-hmm. It says, this is what God is.
Right.
God fits this character attributes. God is like this. God is like that. And the reality is, God is beyond our comprehension. It's beyond what we can know. That's why I always like how Mitchell, you know, describes it when he came, is, you know, that he said, okay, this is the moment when I realized I didn't know. And as soon as you realize I didn't know, that allowed the possibility for God to enter into your life, right?
Well, I used to think I knew everything and I was always right.
Yeah.
And then I found myself in a lockdown facility with no shoelaces and had to reevaluate how I got there. So in that process, it allowed me to say, okay, well, if I'm not always right and I don't know everything, then maybe I should embrace this idea that I can step away, step back from being consumed by my thoughts and observe my thoughts. And so I've heard oftentimes my first thought might be destructive, or maybe my first thought might be alcoholic.
Right.
You know, if I'm an alcoholic or an addict, maybe my first thought is initially not ideal. And so this idea of a pause has become part of my program when I'm in a good spot and I can look at that thought like, do I really want to engage with this person in traffic because I'm not pleased with the way that they're acting?
Right.
Probably not. Does that help? Does that help anything? So anyway, I digress. But I have trained myself to look at my thoughts and evaluate them, and it's given me some success in being less of an asshole.
Yeah.
And I haven't had to get high in a long time.
Yeah.
Which is actually one of the miracles of this program, or these programs we speak of.
When I went to rehab a little over 6 years ago, and it was in rehab, which is a spiritual program. It was there that I realized that I had a spiritual problem, and the addiction, the drug use, the destructive behavior, the destructive lifestyle was the result of me trying to act, think, feel, and believe like I wasn't.
Mm-hmm. So it was a symptom.
Yeah. And so once I realized, hey, you're a spiritual being living in an earth suit, you know, then it allowed me to, because the problem I have, and I still to this day, is taking life on life's terms. Mm. There's one for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what I hate too. I hate that. I hate accepting the way that this is the way it is. It's just, it's part of the creative process. I want to change things. I want to build things. I want to move things. I want to progress things and thoughts and ideas. But what happens is if I don't have a spiritual kind of outlook on those things, there's no room for acceptance. And so drugs and alcohol become a great coping mechanism to get me through. Well, I don't like the way this feeling is. Well, I'm going to change the way I feel. I don't like that I have to address this situation. Well, I'll address it when I'm high. So then it makes it easier, you know, instead of accepting it. And I think that that's what, to me, what spirituality and did and getting an understanding of God, again, helped me to say, I can face these things because there's something greater than me that is with me through that, that I'm not alone in facing that, even though myself will always try and present the idea that you're all by yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. So if we're struggling spiritually and we feel like our only solution to the day-to-day problems is to get loaded or self-destruct and metaphorically hit an eject button from that moment.
Yeah.
It's no surprise to me looking back that, you know, we crash and burn. But to find out that my getting loaded or being self-destructive was just a symptom of a problem I had, which the problem was I didn't know how to live. I didn't know how to treat people. I didn't know how to really put in the work to get the results. I wanted the results and was willing to pay a price for taking shortcuts. And that inevitably led to a pattern of behavior and a lifestyle that was super self-destructive. So when I went to rehab, they basically had to teach me how to live. Like, hey, don't lie. Don't cheat. Don't steal. Treat people right.
Wait, what?
Say things that are helpful. You know, if it's not helpful, even if it's honest, but it's mean, maybe don't say that.
Yeah.
So, you know, take the stuff that, you know, kids like me didn't really get the first time around, they taught me. And I've embraced it, and I can't remember the last time. I can't remember the last time. It's been many years since I felt like the only solution to this problem is to get really intoxicated.
Yeah, that's powerful.
To your point, Christian, you know, I had a similar experience where I recognized the need for say mental health in terms of, you know, being intellectually stimulated.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I recognized the need for physical health in terms of diet and exercise.
Yeah.
I recognized the need for social health.
Yeah.
You know, community. I recognized the need for financial health.
Right.
You know, not balling or anything, but like, you know, I can pay rent.
Right.
What I failed, but no matter how healthy I was in those pursuits, they're cogs on a wheel, you know, and or spokes on a wheel that is my overall well-being, right? It's they're all connected,
right?
And I was missing the spoke of spiritual health, or psychological, however you want to phrase that higher understanding of self. And because of that, no matter what, eventually, all of the weight of the load of my life is going to be bearing down on the section where that spoke should be providing support.
Yeah.
And inevitably, that's when I would get fucked up. Right. Like, that's when things would break down for me.
Right.
And I didn't recognize it. I didn't know what it was. So it would, you know, sometimes the wheel would be turning slowly and I'd be like, oh, I got everything figured out. And then it would come back around. Right. Sometimes I'd be whipping myself into a frenzy and it'd be like, bang, 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 you know? But once I realized, like, holy shit, there's a slice of the pie.
Yeah.
That's not there.
Right.
That I'm starting from scratch. I have to, I've made that discovery. Now it's up to me. Because once I've made the discovery, I know it. There's no unknowing it. There's no turning back.
Right.
So I have three options. I can try to distract myself from it and medicate for when it happens.
Right.
Which, clearly, I developed a physical allergy.
Right.
That, like, all right, well, that's no longer a viable solution because everything gets exponentially worse.
Wait, you can get allergic to poison if you keep taking it?
I believe so. That was my experience.
Interesting.
The other option is to stay stagnant, you know, and allow that fear of, okay, well, I know I can't medicate.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do that. But also the fear of the unknown, yeah. of having to research, explore.
Yeah.
You know, like I've found the master.
Right.
The master's got me under his thumb, and it's this master that he rules me without me wanting to participate in being dominated.
Right.
John Barleycorn?
I like bourbon. So
bourbon, you know, was your master.
Yeah, whiskey, vodka, gin.
Oh, I can't stand
gin. Yeah. Oh,
you had faith that it was going to work?
I did, even though it was repeatedly proven wrong. Right. So
that's funny how you know, we have faith in that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got so a lot of faith in something, right?
So
right.
I was at a point where I was like, I can't do that anymore. I'm scared to go do the research. You know, I've located this master, but I don't have the skills or knowledge to defeat him, right? Right. So I have to go seek out teachers, but that's scary. That means I have to go out into the world.
Yeah.
You know, and I might fail.
And you gotta show yourself.
Wait, you had to ask for help?
Yeah. So instead, I'm just gonna sit in this discomfort.
Right.
And I'm gonna hope that this is sustainable. And I'm not happy. I'm not content. But I'm familiar with pain. And this is pain that it's not killing me in a flash fire. It's a slow burn. I don't know how long it'll take.
Right.
But it's a discomfort that I'm familiar with.
Yeah.
So like those are the negative options. And I just got to a point where I was like, man, that's not good enough. If I'm sticking around, I gotta get the most out of this. And
you were sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Yes. So you got tired of wearing a dirty diaper, right?
Yeah. And I just, you know, at that point it was like, all right, I gotta seek out some teachers.
But now what I think most people do, and this is with anything, because I believe that like we all are addicted to something. We're addicted to the way we think, we're addicted to the way we solve problems, to the way we you know, use money to give us a sense of satisfaction or security. Everybody is at some level addicted to something. And what happens is, I think, rather than facing the unknown, what people do is they think, well, I'll just make this, to use your analogy, I think that's what the word is, analogy, I'll just make this spoke bigger.
Mm-hmm.
I'll make this money spoke so big that it's going to cover half of the wheel. I don't need the spirituality because I got this great sense of self and worth and identity in my job, and everyone loves me and accepts me.
So they can buy happiness.
Yeah. And so what ends up happening is people, it's not illegal. A lot of the worst vices that we have in our world today are not illegal.
Like workaholism.
They're rewarded.
Fucking Netflix.
They're rewarded by, that's a great example of escaping.
It's distraction.
Yeah.
It's all distraction.
My old boss used to say, I don't watch TV because all you're doing is watching other people make money.
Yeah. That's awesome.
I don't actually watch much TV either.
Something I've come around lately or discovered is that, you know, I was talking to a friend and I said, you know, he was concerned about, am I an addict? I haven't used since I was 19. You know, I'm 22 now. I don't drink. I don't, you know, but do I need to be doing all this stuff?
Right.
You know, and I told him, man, it doesn't, whether you're an addict or not, doesn't matter anymore. Like, you know, you can't participate in putting those substances in your body
mm-hmm.
because of the physical ramifications. You've crossed that threshold. You can't undo it. You can't.
Yeah.
He OD'd, right?
Yeah, yeah. What was it about a pickle and a cucumber?
Yeah, you can't unpickle a cucumber. Once you pickle that cucumber, you got a pickle.
There's another one.
So
nice.
I said that doesn't matter. So you can let go of that. Now,
did you give him the pickle analogy?
I did not.
No, okay. That's an old school one.
You spared him of that.
But the thing that got me is like you've created this this perfect distraction because you're not using, right? And this idea you've created, mm-hmm. this question that can't be answered, mm-hmm. it's now taking up all your time. You're obsessing over it. And even if you could answer it, the answer doesn't matter. Right. Because what you've done is...
wrong question.
Yeah. And you've already shown the light on what your purpose is, what the work you need to do to get freedom, right? Freedom's on the other side of hard work is another thing. So if you recognize that it is your authentic struggle mm-hmm. to know yourself, to peel back the layers of the onion, to continue to engage in this process.
All you have to say is you don't like these quips, and then they just all start coming
out. Dude, I know.
To you.
It's endless. And I have to embrace them because I'm visuals. Yeah. So that's peeling back the layers of the onion. I get it. But to engage in this process of refinement to get closer to your higher self,
right?
Whether that's you look at that as God,
higher self, consciousness, sacred self,
soul,
right?
You know, that which encompasses all of your possibilities, right? Mm-hmm. All of your potential.
Mm-hmm. Who you want to be.
Who you are, what resonates at your core, right? If you recognize that unless you're moving towards that, you're irritable, discontent, well, then everything else, if you're not already doing that, mm-hmm. is a distraction. Yeah. If you're doing that, well, you can engage in the distractions in a manageable way that they're no longer a detriment to you.
Okay.
Because also, that core work, mm-hmm. it's going to take some time. It's going to take some energy. It's going to take some focus. It's going to take some dedication. So you might not have as much time for Netflix, for fast food, you know, for talking shit online.
Right.
Like, you got work to do.
Yeah.
But with every little piece of work that you achieve or engage in,
mm-hmm.
you get a little piece of freedom, you know? And Mitch asked earlier, how free do you want to be? He told me the other day, he's like, dude, I gotta be completely free. It's like freedom or death. I was like, all right, well, that's pretty hardcore.
I've at least got to be moving toward that freedom because otherwise I'm moving the other direction.
And you're always practicing something.
Yeah.
No matter what you're doing, you're practicing a modality. You're practicing a mode of operation.
Yeah. I just started saying that I'm practicing Christianity.
Like a doctor practices medicine.
Yeah, because...
it's not just medicine.
Just to be like, yo, I'm a Christian. Like, I'm practicing it. I'm still working it.
Yeah.
Because...
You haven't perfected it.
No, by no means. But as you were saying that, I thought of... There is a Bible verse, and there's a lot of wisdom in the Bible, whether you believe it or not. But in it says that God gives you the desires of your heart. And what a lot of people do is they take that verse and they think, oh, well... Then what if I want a wife, I'll get a wife. If I want a bigger house or peace, I'll get peace. But what I think the deeper meaning there is that your desires become God's desire. You begin to desire, and I think we've seen that in our own lives. Like we don't desire to get, you know, faded or get high because we start desiring having actual relationships with somebody, you know? So I think that's like a deeper understanding of this, of saying that God will give you, because as you seek your higher power, that then in turn is this like cyclical thing that's mm-hmm. happening. Then you become more aware, and then you become to desire the things that God would desire, which I think in most cases is some sort of connection, some sort of community, some sort of transparency, honesty, all these great values that are, you know, we find in the recovery community, probably more so than we find in almost anywhere else. But
when I came in, I remember hearing the word God or hearing the word higher power. I'm like, man, this is corny. Like, this is really corny. And then somebody told me an acronym that I really connected to, good orderly direction.
Yeah.
Like, if the best you can do is associate the acronym good orderly direction when people talk about God, that's enough. And if you practice good orderly direction, you may be able to benefit from this concept of behaving your way into good thinking. Mm-hmm. Because if we're accurate, mm-hmm. you're kind of sick right now as a drug addict,
right.
and you're not going to be able to think your way into good behavior.
Yeah.
So let's take all that thinking you're doing.
That broken mind.
Let's filter itself. Yeah. Let's filter that through some people who have practiced doing this.
Yeah.
With success, and let's behave in a way that will help us to rehabilitate.
Yeah.
And so while it felt uncomfortable, I had to tell on myself when I had thoughts that were probably not ideal.
Yeah.
And through practicing telling people when I was dishonest or practicing being honest more, now I've come to a point where it's very painful to be dishonest. And it's also not commonplace anymore.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Yeah. Those who believe obey, and those who obey believe. And you can't have each one of those statements. And this is from an old Christian philosopher, that you can't have these statements broken from each other. That there are times when you just obey, you just surrender to the process, and then there's times when you actually believe in the process. And I think there's a lot of truth in that, because a lot of what religion and spirituality has been presented as is, if you just believe the right things, then you're okay.
Right.
If I just believe the right things. But there's a little more surrender in that. It's actually, you have to surrender yourself to that process to really get anywhere in whatever that is.
So that's one part of the equation. It's been said that faith without works is dead.
Right.
So you can believe all day, but if you don't take the action,
yeah,
if you're like me, then you're probably not going to get the results you want. So you can believe all day,
right?
But you got to put forth your best effort.
I'm a bird. No.
So
I'm a bird.
To the 2 points you brought up, around what was the first one with God?
God gives you the desires of your heart.
Yep. And then the other one, that are
believe and obey, obey believe.
Right.
Yeah.
So both of those to me, because I don't identify specifically like as a Christian.
Right.
They speak to this idea of, for me, you know, Mitchell said earlier, I kind of have my own unique, I guess, approach, which I think everyone should have, right? But mine in particular, and just sharing that, for me, those speak to this idea of systems. Mm-hmm. Like, if I try to get right in a certain way in my life, I'm going to recognize that, well, if I'm trying to get fit,
yeah,
in order to do so, I need the energy to get fit. So I got to start eating better.
Right.
If I want to get up, and if I need to make time to do it, I got to do it before work. So I need to get up earlier, which means I now need to go to bed earlier.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. If I'm eating better and going to bed earlier and getting up earlier and working out, and now I have energy, now I'm physically capable of doing longer sessions. I'm an artist doing longer sessions. Mm-hmm. I can make more money. You know, money in the Western culture provides a certain amount of freedom.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Certain amount of autonomy. Now I have time for other things that are making me, they're adding to that system. So it's it's a system of, you know, it's like begets like, you know, if you're in tune with that, you know, it's everywhere in nature, even, you know, water seeks level ground.
Right.
Like systems are everything's part of a system, and they all feed together.
Right.
If you are dysfunctional, if you're out of harmony, right.
Yeah.
Then willfully you're going to try to create and maintain a system that reinforces and allows that dysfunction to continue.
Right.
So
yeah,
I think of it in terms of these systems. Yeah. And when you talk about people who obey,
believe,
and people who believe obey, that always, like, that to me, I've got it written down here. That's why I got it on my phone. Mm-hmm. There's a poem by T.S. Eliot called Little Gidding. And I believe that's correct. It might be wrong, but whatever. Don't roast me online. There's this one portion of it I love. And I've got a note where I just dropping like little, I call it, it's my gems, like yeah. little trinkets.
Nice.
That aren't necessarily something I hear at a meeting.
Bag of gems.
Meeting makers make it.
Yeah, right.
But he says, we shall not cease from exploration. And the end of all of our exploring will be to arrive where we started and know the place for the first time. So it's this idea of until you go out, like for me with this idea of God, I didn't know it until I started with it, until I engaged with it.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Okay, what does this mean?
Yeah.
And then I have to, I'm overwhelmed by questions that I need answers to.
Yeah.
And not answers that are facts that work for other people. It works for me. So now I have to go and explore.
Yeah.
And find teachers and take from them what seem to be parts of a whole that work for me.
Right.
And then when I come back around to this idea of God now I have an understanding. It's this pool of greater consciousness that we're all, you know, a drop of.
Yeah.
And maybe, perhaps we're parsed into these individual containers so that... These earth meet space suits. So right. that we can experience ourselves.
Right.
From the infinite array of perspectives, interactions.
Yeah.
And so that we can work and understand at love.
Yeah.
You know, and then
what's interesting is a lot of that pool. A lot of what you're saying is not very far from true practicing Christian thought.
Right.
I mean, when you dive deeper in that. So, you know, I always have to feel like I got a shout out.
Yeah.
My man, Jesus.
So let me...
Because
the homie, like, came through strong for me. So, GC. You know, I got to represent my boy.
It's all good.
But what I... The thing that that's beautiful about, like, the way that you describe that is... and also, like, it's simple. Because all you have to do is break the pattern.
Yeah.
The problem is breaking the pattern. Because most of us don't desire to break the pattern until the pattern no longer works.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, if this has been working, like I had a boss once who was completely pain in the butt. Amazing though. I mean, made us money and made things work, but he was a pain in the butt and he would never think to do things differently. And I realized, why would he? What he's doing is working.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're all making money off of what he's doing.
Yeah. Don't reinvent the wheel.
Why would he try to... You know, and it wasn't until he was forced to break that pattern that now he's reinvented himself and now he's found much more. He's probably doing the same kind of process, but at least he's moved on, he's progressed. But it's not until we break that pattern.
And that comes down to, this is another thing in my program, that like threshold.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of things come down to threshold.
Yeah.
What's your threshold for discomfort? What's your threshold for pain? What's your threshold for freedom?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
At what point can you go, oh, I recognize that I'm no longer content in the way I was. I think of it as like a staircase, right?
Mm-hmm.
I do this work. I hit a wall.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, fuck, I can't go forward anymore.
You gotta climb.
So now I gotta do the hard work and climb up. And then I get to that next level of comfort.
Yeah.
And I move along till I hit a wall. It's important to recognize, though, that wall is as you advance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mitch, when I first came in, you know, he was saying, "Man, we're not trying to eliminate problems. We're trying to achieve a better quality of problem."
Nice.
Right. So my problem is no longer. I work at a stuffy office. I wear a sweater vest. I'm pretending to be someone I'm not. Right, yeah. I got pleated khakis on. I'm clean shaven.
No way, you were?
Yeah. Whoa. And I like I hid my tattoos.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, chat around the coffee. I fucking hated who I was. But I was that person out of necessity.
Right.
Right. Fake it till you make it. And I was like, this isn't coming around.
Right.
I hate this person.
Right.
That I am. This is a terrible problem to have.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Now my problem is
You broke the pattern with...
Well, I got in touch with, through research, through hard work, with who I really am, what my values are, what my fears are.
Right.
Right?
Your truth.
My truth, my higher self. I have an understanding of my higher self now. And now my issue is...
Is this post, like, getting clean, or this is while you're still...
It happened kind of...
During.
So I was circling the drain, and I was working this job, and I was like, what the fuck? And, like, I was drinking till 5 a.m. I set up my schedule in a very, like, sinister way to where, like, I'm there hours before anyone else gets there. I sleep because I drove to work drunk at 5 a.m. I got there by 7. Right. Boss doesn't get in till 9. I wake up at 9. We have a meeting at 10.
That was your system.
That was my system.
That was your program?
Yeah. That was my program. And I practiced that shit hard. Yeah. And, man, it ended me in a facility without shoelaces.
Wait, the booze quit working?
Oh, yeah, it quit working a while ago. But I got to a point where it was like, all right, I can't do this shit, man. I gotta figure it out. And then, so I engage in this process, and we figure out, okay, this is actually who I am. Well, let's move towards that.
Right. But it was that discomfort, and I know there was much more discomfort, but it was that kind of helped to get to this point. So to break the pattern. And I think I find that even my own life, and when I'm talking to other people about life and their issues, is it's like, you know, are you willing to break the pattern? Are you willing to be free? And a lot of people just aren't. They just don't want to face it. So, but I want to say that if you do want to break the pattern, then you can call us at 657-464-7159, 657-464-7159, you can call, or you can just text that number, and someone will get back to you, and we want to help you to break that pattern, whatever it is. If it's addiction, if it's depression, if you can't stand your life, if you're suicidal, if you're bored out of your mind.
You're just seeking answers.
If you're just seeking answers. I mean, it doesn't have to be...
a new modality of thought.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be life-threatening. If you're sitting in a church and you're going, I don't believe this anymore, you know, whatever it is.
What if your friend's suffering?
Yes. That's a good one. If your friend is suffering.
If your friend's suffering, if your loved one's suffering, we might be able to give you some experience, strength, and hope with that.
Yeah. And if it's not us, then we can connect you to people. And that's really the purpose of why
we'll get you on the start.
Doing this.
What if what if you're not Christian?
That doesn't matter.
All right, cool.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Love it.
All right. I think this was great. And our longest podcast. So if anybody's listening to the podcast and they've gotten to this point, please send me a message.
Well done.
We got my man here who runs a recovery program watching.
Nice.
I won't say his name, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So that was the Most High Show. Thank you guys for coming around, and I hope to do it again next week.
All right.